Welcome everybody to the Remix My Fitness podcast. I'm your host Jimmy Kim. What's going on today? I hope your day is going fabulous, or at least better than mine. I have a 7-month-old daughter, and she is such a beauty during the day, but at night she's our little terror. So for any sleep-deprived parents, any new parents, you guys know what I'm talking about. So shout out to all the parents out there trying to make it to the next day, because definitely I'm feeling it. I'm starting to feel it now. 7 months in, starting to feel it. Another shout out I want to give out to is to Jennifer Sago. I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right. Jennifer Sago, or Saigo, her last name spelled S-Y-G-O. And if you know how to pronounce that right, please let me know. But I went and I saw her speak a couple days ago, and she was fantastic. Jennifer Sago is a dietitian and sports nutritionist for a few of the prominent professional sports teams. She's a speaker, she's the author of Unmasking Superfoods. It was such a pleasure listening to Jennifer speak on three really trending diets, which was keto, intermittent fasting, plant-based. She gave me like a fresh outlook on these diets that have been around for a while, that I've known for a while, that I've tried before, which has inspired me to try one of these diets again. I've tried the ketogenic diet roughly maybe about 8 years ago when I was first trying to lose weight. I don't think I did it right. But after listening to Jennifer talk about the ketogenic diet, it's actually inspired me to try the ketogenic diet again, and with a different outlook this time. Now, of course, I know on the ketogenic diet, I will probably lose some weight, but that's not actually what I'm most curious about. What I'm really curious about is whether my body will produce ketones or not. And that was like one of the sticking points that Jennifer had, Jennifer was speaking about, which was all the other diets out there, the paleo diet, Atkins diet, point-based diets, whatever it is, whatever diet that you're on, there's no 100% way to know that, like, look, this is, I'm doing the plant-based diet 100% and I'm doing it correctly. Whereas the ketogenic diet, you can use these ketone strips that you could purchase at your pharmacy or online, and it's a very clear, you're either producing ketones or you're not producing ketones. So I've decided, and totally not with the, I know it's gonna be tough because I got kids, you know, who don't finish their foods, and I'm called the, at home I'm called the garbage man, because I pretty much clean up all their leftovers, everyone's leftovers, whether it's my wife, whether it's my daughter, whether it's my son. When food's left over, I can't stand that. I can't see plates of food being left over. I gotta eat it. I'm not gonna be able to do that this time, or at least for the next few days. If you want to follow my ketogenic journey, get on Facebook, join our community. It's the Remix My Fitness community. I will go step by step on what I'm doing to produce ketones in my body, and I'm interested in the results as well. But like I said, I'm more interested to see whether those strips that I'm gonna have to do my business on, it will actually turn purple. So come on by and join us. So today I have a fantastic podcast for you listeners out there. As you know, and if you don't know, I'll let you know, I go out there and I'm interviewing regular people who have jobs, people who are in school, people who are married, people who just had kids. I'm out there looking for people who are doing fitness their way, living a healthy lifestyle their way, and finding out what health and fitness really means to them. In today's podcast, Daniel Young will be sharing his story with us, and there are a lot of great takeaways from today's episode. Particularly, I liked how he took his college friend's philosophy, which was take it one step at a time, and he expanded that to fit his needs and fit his wants, which was he decided how far could that one step carry him. So let's find out how far that one step took Daniel. Let's get to the show.
Start us off and tell us a little bit about how you got started in your own personal fitness from maybe like the earliest memory that you can think of.
I think earliest one is probably in kind of junior high school. My CSEC teacher said, hey, there's a handball tournament. We need a team. And I just didn't know much. I said, well, let's do it. So it was the first time I had to actually train to do push-up. I was like 13 years old, and only to realize that when you go to a tournament, we're the smallest and weakest team, and we have no endurance, no strength. And basically, the entire tournament were destroyed. and that was how I started. Like, more for self-awareness. Wow, we were very weak. And then because of academic focus in Hong Kong, so it was never something that let's continue to build out, work out, and none of that. Then I came to Canada as a student, now no longer live with my parents. And I guess the first exposure I had with really fitness, health and fitness, is after the second year when I moved to Victoria. There's a community center nearby. Every night after 11 o'clock, it's $1. You can get in to swim and go to a gym. And that's when I say it's only a dollar. And then I don't have much to do. So every evening, I'll roll my bike to take advantage of the $1 special. And that's how I get exposed to a bit of swimming and a bit of working out. And over the next few years, when you're in university, you're surrounded by lots of people that are really focused on health and fitness, especially in Victoria. They're known for their rugby and the soccer team. There's a lot of, and a rowing team, there's a lot of fit people around me. So I kind of got attracted into it, hit the gym more often and start working out. So I think that's the time when I start building on muscle mass, focus a lot on that. And then I came across running. Someone that I know, my roommate, I just started running, trying to lose weight. So I thought, oh, running sounds interesting. So I kind of started running. So I think I started doing all that right around when I was 21 years old. I started basically a little late, but that's when I started really enjoy working out and cycling and running.
Well, I mean, you mentioned 21, you feel like you started late, but I personally don't think there's like a late time or right time to start any kind of physical activity, but it's actually quite early. I think lots of people who have just started working out in their 30s and 40s, so 21 is actually not that late. But I did want to touch on one thing, which was it's amazing that you didn't have much experience with your fitness journey, but cost was a big factor because you were in school, so you went to this. Went to this place where they only charge a dollar, but you actually rode your bike to the venue and worked out there, and probably rode your bike back, right? So you almost had this dual workout that was happening.
Yeah, those are things that I'm a practical guy. Now, I needed the bike, and I actually didn't know how to ride road bike before. That's how I learned. But it's more about it's cheaper than taking the bus, and it was recommended to me that I should get a bike to get around Victoria, because over the years I found that if you're a decent rider, it's faster to ride a bike than taking public transportation. So that was just a practical choice. And you were right. And then I found that cycling during those few years gave me a very good foundation. I never ride bike for being for competition or anything. It just out of necessity. In Victoria, is there nothing but hills. Everywhere you go, you got to go up hills or downhill.
Right.
So it's a natural training ground for me.
And when you kind of first started everything, like how did you know what to do? How did you know, like, you go to the gym, and how did you know what kind of weights to pick up, what kind of moves to do, or if you swam, did you have some sort of program?
No, at all. I can say I still don't know. I mean, basically, I think this is the most people perception when you look at, the big people out there, you see the chest is big, the bicep and tricep. And I think that this is where I build muscle mass based on focus on what I can see as opposed to what I need to be a foundation. So bicep curl. But I do think about one thing that after watching a movie with Sylvester Stallone about, you know, Chris Hanger, it's important that I need to carry my own body weight. So a lot of my work, besides weightlifting, I do a lot of weight, basically more free body weight, chin up, push, those sort of things that I do. But so, I didn't know anything, and I focus on the big muscle that you can see as opposed to things that people don't pay attention to.
Right, because those things were, I mean, you could easily pick up a magazine at that time, a stand, and any men's magazine or men's fitness magazine, it was usually showing how massive or how big, you know, muscular that you can be, right?
Yeah, and the other thing I come across people that just want to be bodybuilders, and you kind of follow along with IDN. I think what the thing is to your question is, I didn't have a goal. I know there's a workout, I do whatever I feel right and convenient. And that's sort of, you pick up dumbbells, you start doing arm curl, you do that. But I really didn't have a whole lot of knowledge. I just know that, yes, at the time I said, okay, workout is good. And I start seeing whatever part that I worked on, they start seeing results like that. I'll just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it amazing that you didn't have like a program or anything, and you were just doing like some resistance training on your own and still found results that way?
Yeah, that was interesting because I become pretty big for my, I'm a small frame kind of guy. And then I thought, I remember that when a couple of years later, I went back to Hong Kong and my friend kind of looked at Oleg, how he just kind of so much bigger. And, but to me, it's like, I just work out every day. I'm not particularly into protein powder or anything like some of my friends, they were doing it. But I just knew that I was always hungry. I actually ate a lot. And because of my cycling and also a bit of running that I do, that I really, it doesn't matter what I put in my body, I just burn them.
Right. And so, which leads us to the running. So at 21 years old, your roommate was, or a friend of yours, was it a roommate or friend?
Oh, it was a roommate.
Yeah, so a roommate of yours was trying to lose a little bit of weight and started running, and you decided to kind of tag along with this person, right?
Well, I never really ran with him. He gave me a philosophy. He basically said, he was a bit of English major, and then he decided just kind of run. He told me when I was younger, which is when he was high school, he was fit. He was really fit. And then 2 years university, he gained like 40 pounds, big belly, and drunk half the time. So he said, I'm just going to go running. I just run by myself. I don't want anyone to bother me. So, but he gave me an idea about, he said, it's difficult, but I just tell myself one step at a time. And I think that one step at a time, I actually didn't need to run to keep fit at the time, but I thought, interesting. I wondered how that one step at a time, how far it would carry me. So I just start running. And I also like the fresh air and outdoor in Victoria, like around UVic. You run to ocean and you start to Mount Baker, and just see, it's a different way of enjoying the scenic other than running. So rather than cycling, I would say. So that's how I started. And quickly I found out I had no endurance. It was tough. It was just tough. But then again, I look at my roommate. He would go out 15 minutes, an hour at a time. I thought, how could he do that when he was so out of shape? And years later, I mean, fast forward, I see that it's much more a mental discipline as opposed to cardiovascular strength. But then I think I didn't know why I did it, but I just felt like it's the right things to do. I just kept doing it.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about this one step at a time. That was a philosophy that kind of, you know, that got you into the running. But that one step at a time now, you are still running very regularly. And yeah, so tell us a little bit about that. From 21 till now, you are still running, taking it one step at a time. Like, tell us about that journey.
Yeah, there is a bit of a personal redemption. So I started running that year, and then I met someone that said, hey, there's a 10K run in Victoria. I never joined any race, never even knew this race. So I joined a 10K run. I remember 51 minutes and change, and people said, oh, you did really well. And all I felt was I was exhausted. Then I come across as a marathon in the same, a month later. So I thought, well, if I can run 10K. And someone mentioned to me that if someone can then run any regular human being should be able to do back-to-back marathon. Not easy, but they have enough to do it. I don't know who told me that. I thought, oh, let me sign up for a marathon and see what it's like. So I went for the marathon, and I hit the wall the midway, actually. And I was so hurt at the time, man. But then I refused to give up. I finished the marathon, finished at 4:30, not the greatest time. And then I said, that was it. I would never run again. But after I recovered from that, and I thought, you know, I just have this random goal set myself. At that time, I was in my 20s. I said, I'm going to do this again before I turn 40. That was it. That was the last time I ran any marathon, any major race for a long, many years.
So you went from, in your 20s, you ran your first marathon. You did a time of four hours and 30 minutes. And you didn't commit to doing another marathon, but you told yourself before 40, you're going to do at least another one.
Yeah, I wanted to redeem myself. And so what I did was, so keep in mind, that was I started running within a few months. I would join the 10K, and within a few weeks, and I moved into a marathon. So that was kind of the classic things that I see today is I get so excited about working out or doing, sticking to a regime. And literally, that regime disappeared in the span of 4.5 months. But I still cycle. I do do all that, but I didn't stick to that. Many years later, I moved to Toronto. I'm still trying to maintain running as part of the exercise that I do. But I stopped doing that because the work, family, there's so many factors that I sort of forgot about it. And my career was taking off, getting busier and busier. And the stress, I actually didn't know that I couldn't really manage the work stress. At 37, I become a bit overweight with two kids. From 140, my peak, my heaviest weight when I was working out is 148. I reached the point of 185, and I stopped measuring my waistline after 34. When it gets things so tight, I let everything go. And then one year, then my dad told me, you should do a little checkup a little early, because my dad is a type 2 diabetic. So that year, I did the check, and then voila, and I'm now on the borderline. Basically, I was considered a type 2 diabetic, 37. The world just kind of started crumbling down. I don't know how to react. I was scared. Kids are young, and I'm going to die, and all that stuff. And lots of people really encouraged me, and then I thought, become scared about, I need to exercise. I need to have diet. So I'm doing things for the wrong reason, because I was afraid to die. And I talked to more and more people, and one of the pharmacist friend of mine told me, Daniel, when you uncover that you're type 2 diabetic, it's a lifestyle disease. If you manage it well, you actually probably live longer than most people because you're young now. You start good lifestyle. It was a really good positive encouragement, and from a pharmacist, you know, science. And so I turned 37. 38, and a couple of people in the work could say, let's do a relay. To run the good life at a relay, all you do is 5K. So I thought, oh, you know what? I can go back and start running again. And I did the 5K. It was not easy. The second year, I did again. After I did my second year of relay, and they say, let's do it every year. And then it dawned on me, and say, oh, no, I just turned 39. Then I remember I made a commitment. So it kind of all came back to me. 40 is a big day, big things, right? Oh, I need to run a marathon. So from running 5K, the first thing I did is I signed up for a marathon. I thought I would train for it. Again, without training plan, I thought I'd just run. I was running up to 10K or so. I did. And that whole marathon was as horrible, if not worse, than the first one.
Oh, wow.
And I went into, it was raining, it was cold. By the time my legs start cramping up at 25 kilometers, and then I did it the entire time, miserable. Even had an urge to jump on the bus to finish it. And I finished it, went into a state of hypothermia. Like, to me, it was serious. I come out of that and say, okay, now I committed to finish it. At 39, before I turn 40, I finished my marathon. That was it. A few months later, I say, that's not the way how I want to finish my marathon. I cramped up. I was dying. I signed up for the next one. Next one. The next one was better, from 4:30 to 4:10. but my legs still clamp up. I signed up for the next one. I said, you know what? I will stop if I can run a full marathon with continuous run nonstop. At 3:50, I hit the goal. I finished the marathon. The third try is I slightly cramp up. I'm okay, but I should finish it. That was like, oh my God, I actually ran under 4 hours. How did it happen? Then I went to 3:40 and then I get injured. I had to learn again. And I thought when you reach 3:40, you think that you can do more. The next year I did 3:21. I can go to Boston. And that's when I being a little impatient, not really put effort in training, injure my hips. And that's the last couple of years. And that's how I met you, Jimmy. And I told you about my heart problem is because I overtrained. I was too eager to achieve a goal that I did. I wasn't at the right foundation. So I kind of last 2 years, I rebuilt myself, continued to run marathon. And I think this weekend, if I'm lucky, and I might actually finally hit my goal to qualify for Boston. But it was a really long journey from the need or necessity of a lifestyle change to also a personal commitment that I made in my 20s to start to figuring out how do I sustain the goal using mental toughness, but also making a commitment to myself to sustain it.
And if I can go back to your first race for a second here, you said halfway through you hit a wall. Do you think you explain to people what that means, hitting a wall?
Your legs just froze up, cramp up. You just want to stop. You couldn't lift your legs for another step. That's a mental wall. Because I was running along, I was doing well, talking to people, and I get tired. But people running is good. But I saw the first person stop. I didn't know why they stopped. But all of a sudden, it just hit my brain as I, man, I'm tired. I need to stop. And just like that, my legs just kind of cramp up. And then I basically have to stop, loosen up, keep going. So I hit the wall, basically. I reached a point that my legs and my body is saying, I can't take another step anymore.
Yeah. But you were still able to endure and you still finished the race that first time.
Yes. I've never once skipped or not finished something I started.
Mm-hmm.
So marathon perspective, sorry. Yeah.
And what, where most people where they would have hit the wall, where they just couldn't finish. And, you know, I've hit the wall a couple of times in my life, not just in running, but in other types of things. It is extremely tough to kind of tell yourself like, hey, you can finish. Hey, you can get through this. But not only to finish, but then to commit to say like, you know what? I'm going to do this again. Like a lot of people would not do something like that, would not commit to themselves to put themselves through something like that. What made you want to do that at the age of 21 to say, you know what? I'm going to put the timeline and by the time I'm 40, I'm going to do this again.
Well, I'm going to be embarrassed to tell you that my first marathon, why I did what I did. When I communicate with people I'm going to do it, I want to give myself some courage and encouragement. I said if I didn't finish the marathon, then I would shave my head.
You shave your head?
I did not want to shave my head. And the other practical reason was when you're out in North Vancouver, you have to make your way to downtown Vancouver to get to a starting point anyway. You kind of have to finish it. You have no choice anyway. So at the time, I was being very, you know, stubborn. Like I made a commitment. I want to see it. And the second time again, I wanted to stop, but I didn't want to stop. It again, it was helpful because I know that at the finish line, my wife and kids will be there. I need to get back. But I didn't want to get back in, you know, in an ambulance or in any other way. So
on that bus.
Exactly. So I set on this, in a way, there's certain goal that keep me going. I think the key is about the two philosophy I tell people to is I apply this to personal life and then professional life. I always tell people that when you start on an assignment, when you join a new company, trying to get a job there, you're going to go through a period of time that is, oh, man, it's difficult, or it's boring, or it's tired. Oh, the win, I can't do this anymore. But I said to you, these are the things that will build experience and characters. And I was inspired by a couple of people in the finance department, you know. And every monthly or quarterly, they would be working overnight to get a close to quarter. They call that, you know, they have to do the financial. And I said, a few people I met that have so much energy, intensity, and focus at work. I said, these are very high-performing individuals at work. I said, how did they do that? One thing in common, they are all runners, and marathon runners. And obviously, not just marathon, but I know other people that endurance sport or commit to certain health fitness regime. These are the people that bring so much focus and intensity and commitment to work. So I always say that as part of my career journey, I always look at, hey, how can I emulate people like that? So I think running is a way for me to emulate people like that so that I don't give up because it's difficult. And I don't stop training because I just don't feel like running. I don't feel like this and that. I started learning different strategy to keep myself focused and kind of it's more about follow through with a commitment. And those are the things that I kind of learned to. And from an intrinsic, I don't know why I did it. You ask me now, I don't know how I did it. But if you ask me now, I'm actually start devising a strategy to keep myself focused.
And if we can kind of, I want to touch on this focus and this mental toughness that you've mentioned a couple of times. What do you think? What would you attribute that to? Is that did you do some sort of special training? Would you say it was like your upbringing? Like is it something that you've always had in yourself or that you built up? Like what would you say? What would you say this mental toughness? What could you speak to about it?
At first it may be a bit of a personality trait. I did company give us this personality profile, and I am like a consistent, like a closer. Someone like to start something new and they move on, but I like the consistency. So to me, there's a bit of my love for routine, my consistency. So I have some personality trait that I have. But when you think about what I really helpful for me is when I start understanding how to incorporate my personal, professional, even, you know, I think career and also training, I start telling myself a story, start connecting the dots, why this is good for me. Because I always say, as parents, you always look for in the future. So some of the upbringing is, I would never go through the same difficult period like my parents did, you know, during the Cultural Revolution in China. So whatever difficulties that I go through, is pale in comparison what they have gone through. So from that perspective, I would say, how do I make sure that yes, I'm ready for the next big problem? So that is motivation. Number one, you have the motivation. But the second one is, well, where do I pick that? So to me, that's when I start looking into your mind, your body, as actually they work together. So I need to make sure that their resiliency in terms of mindset and my body. So endurance and long-term training commitment will build that resiliency in my body. But when I have that strength, it fit my mental strength. So to me, I figured you cannot have one or the other. The two will just fit itself. And then the third is, you know, the endorphin. The more you work out, the better you feel. So then really about over time, I gone from not able to do 20 minutes of warm-up to now I'm running 2-3 hours in my long run. So from that perspective, I think it's a one step at a time, but the awareness, I only come to now I mentor people. The awareness is now I know how they're connected. But for the longest time, I would say that yes, somehow my mind, I feel good for doing this and I just keep doing what I feel good. And until the point that I just now know why I need to do it. And there's nothing more than, I think that, but I'll kudos to my parents. My parents, they would tell me that, yes, all the life crisis that you deal with is nothing. You better be prepared for the next one. So that's really give me the motivation to overcome this toughness in terms of mental or physical. Because I know if I can't get through it, how am I going to protect my family and myself, right?
Mm-hmm. And you've broken this down into three categories. So if I can just quickly recap here, so not just the motivation to do something, but the why are you doing this, right? That's important. Mm-hmm. And then the combination of resiliency and strength, and combining that with with the mental toughness. Like you believe that that's an important combination. They go hand in hand together, right?
Absolutely.
And the third one is the endorphins that you produce. You consistently are going out and you're training, you're producing this happy, good feeling. So you continuously want to kind of keep that up. So you continue to work out, right?
Yeah. And yeah. The more recently, since I start changing my perspective on training, I don't like long run the most, but I start doing all my long run with friends now. So they become a social thing. When I tell people that, I call it the win-win strategy. When you see the value of, everyone understands the positive value of exercise. But a lot of people could not justify the time spent on exercise or the post-run or post-workout feeling. It's feel tired. So what I tell to people though is, if time is a problem, when you're competing against time for this and that, and I said, why don't you figure out how to find a win-win situation? So therefore, when I run on the weekend, I actually run with people that are well-knowledge in the industry that I work in or have hobbies that will teach me with new learning. So to me, then those long-run sessions become the time I spend on learning something new. Otherwise, I wouldn't be exposed to or establishing network. So I do run meetings so that I use those so that I tell people. So this is good. I get to do exercise. I get to expand my network. I get to learn something new. So that become a thing for me. So I figure out a win-win-win situation. And so those long run become not dreadful at all.
So you do two amazing things that, you know, I think is just great, which is one, you recognize that, you know, you like running. But two, those long distance runs can sometimes be a little bit tedious. So you decide to run with friends or run with the other people that you know that run. And then you have now made this into like a little bit of a social / networking / you know, either personal or career building.
Well, knowledge in the industry that I work in or have hobbies that will teach me with new learning. So to me, then those long run sessions become the time I spend on learning something new. Otherwise, I wouldn't be exposed to or establishing network. So I do run meetings so that I use those so that I tell people. So this is good. I get to do exercise. I get to expand my network. I get to learn something new. So that become a thing for me. So I figure out a win-win-win situation. And so those long run become not dreadful at all.
So you do two amazing things that I think is just great, which is one, you recognize that you like running, but two, those long distance runs can sometimes be a little bit tedious. So you decide to run with friends or run with the other people that you know that run. And then you have now made this into like a little bit of a social / networking / you know, either personal or career building scenario, right? And which you have called a win-win-win situation, and I think that's amazing. How did you develop something like that?
It's evolution, right? It's a building block one step at a time, and then as I become more experienced into at work and in my personal life, I think that I'm one of my personality traits is I'm very much a reflective person. The natural gravitating toward reflecting my life, my story. So when I look back and when I start connecting the dots, I really think about what are the things that are important to me. Happen to be in my career and also the team that I support, they all say in the new economy, networking is so important. So I said, well, but we don't have time for that. And then health is so important because I'm in the health industry. But it also goes through the personal journey. I think this is important to me because I want to look after my family. And then those are the things that when I start looking into, I think, how do I condense the effectiveness of the use of my time to maximize the outcome? So that's really, because I have a process improvement background, so that's how I look at it. I actually apply work into my personal life. But then I also talk to people. the why do they do what they do? Why do they find problems? So to me, really what it comes down to is, I haven't read any book to tell me this, but what I do know though is I have to look at what works for me, what do I want? And then I want to be very clear about what is that I want. Then the next step will be, how do I maximize every time that I have to do that? So I would tell people that, yes, if you don't know what you want, if you don't even talk to people about what your goal, if you have 60 minutes in front of you, naturally the 60 minutes will be a wasted 60 minutes because you're going to focus on let your autopilot drive you towards something that you already know. But I think the important for me is, I reflected on what is important to me, what it is that I want. So I anticipate, if I have 60 minutes, how would I spend it? So that's how I kind of come up with this idea about like networking, learning, and exercising routine.
Because you don't just do that with, I mean, you do that to network and things like that, but you've also implemented some of these techniques to even your work life, right?
Absolutely.
Could you tell us some ways you've done that?
In an example, some people that go to the gym during lunchtime and they work out really hard. And I said, have you paid attention to the people working out in the gym with you? They could be the next potential hiring manager, director for you. Or they could know someone that knows something that you want to know. So I start telling people that you go to the gym, see the same person every day, then you talk to them. But a lot of people that introvert a personality like me, you don't go up to a stranger to talk to them. So one of the things that I start looking at is to understand one of the career barriers for some of the introverted individuals about they don't know how to build networks. So what I do is I teach them skill, basically practical skill. But then I have them implement those skills in a setting, which is what they want, they're working out. And from time to time, I go and introduce them. I would open the door for them. So I do that. And the other one I do was the need to understanding the industry that we are in. And because we're in my office all day long, if I would need to learn more about other areas of business, I don't have time just to set up meetings for the sake of learning about business. So I start asking other people, hey, anyone interested in a run? Let's do a run meet or stair climbing meet so that during those time, I purposely would pair myself up with different people from different backgrounds. And now we talk about business, talk about anything. So to me, those are things that I will have to, knowing what I want, then I create a condition for either my team or myself. And every time I meet someone new, half the time I bring the person back to my work and introduce them to my team and again help create that social circle and fitness circle. So I start connecting the dots that way. So to me, trying to find that a common ground between team members, but in the theme that I take is always about mentoring and fitness.
And how have you found that? How have you found having like team building meetings through stair climbs or through like runs? Like, have you found it like it's been positive or been getting any blowback from that at all?
Well, not everyone enjoy it, but I would say though, yes, it is positive. And I find that it's amazing when someone told you, Daniel, I ran my first 5 kilometers or I'm joining the CN Tower climb fundraising. I'm doing this and that. And by the way, I'm still talking to the person that you introduced me to. So to me, it's gratifying for myself for sure, but I've seen the positive outcome and in turn seeing the people that benefit from it start promoting this to other people. So to me, start a movement is not about having big program. In my mind, I'm an introverted person. I like one-on-one relationships. So to me, starting a movement is about having one-on-one, find common ground, and then find a win-win and help get one person on and one person on. So this has been my journey. Now, because I've been with the company for a long time, so when I do it consistently for many years, this is not a one-year thing. All of a sudden, you will see, well, there's a massive, lots of people do that. But I said, it's all start with the first conversation, first commitment. And if you do it consistently, the 50 work weeks, well, actually more like 50 work weeks in a year, have one or two meeting a month over, and then that person will have one or two. And over the past 10 years, I would say that I have built a lot of kind of foundation, kind of plant the seed, and then people start doing it more and more. And it's not something that don't give up because you think that you can only influence so little. Think about in your lifetime, I'm going to be in this company or in any company for another 15, 20 years. So if you have 20 years to build this project, that's a lot of time for you to do. But if you think about you want to achieve greatness and you're within 3 months, then you have to recalibrate your goal. Is it realistic? A lot of people that are working out too, yes, again, it's not about now. It's everything that we do is to have better quality of life after you retire. One of the person that inspired me a lot of used to be a legal counsel at a company. Retire probably at the age of 70, and people always talk about he has the physique of a 35 years old. So strange. As I said, I was in my 30s then. I say, wow. Imagine he is a better his fitness level is better than I was when I was in my 30s. Imagine that when I do retire, I can do everything that I can do today. That is amazing. So something I would tell people that the commitment is not about any short-term goal help, but you have to have a long view in fitness.
You really love those win-win situation. So it's amazing how you can incorporate that in your personal life. This is your win-win situation, your personal, professional, and your fitness life. That is your win-win-win situation to combine those three together and in every different little facet. And I think that's something that I have to say probably the first I've ever heard of anyone doing.
No, thank you. I mean, in the practical sense, a lot of younger people that are actually interested in fitness, especially in Canada, you know, we're Canadian. Tax rate is really high, and we're going to go bankrupt if we keep spending on healthcare dollar the way we spend. So if we're responsible for our own health, our friends and our family, by the time people that are in their 30s now, by the time they retire, the country might still have money for your benefit. I think to me, it's a very practical sense. And these are things that you cannot change over 1 or 2 years. It's a lifetime. So it's more like a movement of the country so that we all are responsible. And to me, is my personal contribution to the economy.
That's a really cool way of thinking about it. So when you do these things, like myself, you must run into a lot of people who have never done anything fitness related, or you're probably this is their first thing that they're gonna do. So do you run into a lot of people where this like I've never done a stair climb before in my life, or I've never been physically active? Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, all the time.
So what advice do you give this person? What advice do you give someone who has like this is their they want to network with you, they want to get to know Daniel, they want to be friends with you, and at the same time they realize, okay, I want to make this little shift. What do you tell them?
Two things. One is this is the same concept of those who want to do. Well, think about networking. What is the basic of networking? It's not about getting to know many people. It's about how can you add value to your network, to someone else? To build a successful and good network is about adding values. So when someone wanted to network with me, I actually look at it as, how can I add value to you? So not just about getting to know me. It's about if you have a fear of running or taking the stairs as an example, a lot of my meeting is a just basic walking meeting. Not sitting down, is walking meeting. So I was basically, let me walk the first mini step with you. And then I will make sure that is to me, I would actually invest my time to make sure that I accommodate you so that you don't need to run at my pace. I walk at your pace. We start there. So to me, it's really important that how whether you feel supported to begin with. Some people are more self-driven. You tell them what to do and they just do it. But a lot of time I find that is, if I could, I would go out of my way to help you to kickstart it. And those are the things I do. And because one of the things I find though is, if you already have a perceived barrier, you are likely less motivated to do it on your own. The way I look at it is I need to figure out someone who has an interest in helping and also enjoying that. So from that perspective, I would say either I do it or I usually do someone to do it. And when I start doing that, some of the things that I do is I would even facilitate walking meeting to make sure that you go walking with someone. So once you become a little habit and routine, then you overcome one barrier to the next. It's really, it's not about magic. Again, I go back to the, it's easy for me to give you one-off advice, but if I do genuinely care about you, and I will have to make sure that I check in, and I check in, or even I walk the road with you. So it's something that I do, but I think when people see that as a benefit, they start emulating it. Then I start seeing more and more kind of the walking meetings happening now. Tomorrow, in fact, I have a cycling meeting tomorrow, stationary, because I don't want to run a table in right now. So tomorrow it'll be a cycling meeting.
Wow. So that you have an excellent mindset, not just in fitness, but, you know, leading the way as well, being a leader and not just telling people, hey, you need to go and get fit, but helping them and walking with them and being active with them. And that, to me, is a sign of someone who has an excellent mindset in fitness and health, but is also an excellent leader. And that's something you should be really proud of.
Oh, thank you.
So we're about to wrap up here, but I was wondering, do you have anything that you'd like to ask me? It could be something about your own personal fitness or fitness in general or health or anything like that.
I mean, you have given me very good advice. I mean, if I were to look at where I am, like, I still want to run more, and I know that I always know that I need to do more exercise. I think if there any practical advice for runners in general is, how do we build strength without gaining weight? We don't want muscle mass, but we want really strong muscle. I think
right.
That's the one thing that in my mind is like, keep running alone is not going to help. So I need to, like, that's one of the interest area that I haven't done enough of research. I know the exercise I need to do, but really to become more scientific to why, which part of the muscle need to be at this strength and why. And those are things that I probably wouldn't mind picking your brain on.
Yeah. I would love to kind of give my thoughts on that. So what you do is you do an endurance sport, and I can understand why, you know, building more mass and having to carry more weight is going to hinder your time. So I would look at either two things. One, I wouldn't really shy away from strength and conditioning. And I think strength and conditioning is a little bit different than where the focus is building muscle. So one of the easy ways that I like to kind of represent this is the number of reps that you want to do. So it really isn't about how much weight that you can push, but the reps that you perform in exercises will determine, well, I would say it will determine the type of body that you have, the type of skills that you're looking to build. So I would say, even though I know you're doing an endurance sport, sticking to some sort of strength regimen and having your rep ranges being anywhere between 12 to 15 reps, where it is a challenging 12 to 15 reps, where the first eight, you're like, yeah, I could do this until the cows come home. But you get to number 11, you're like, yeah, I only got about one more left. And when you stick to that range, you shouldn't be really too worried about the amount of muscle mass that you're building. But another thing that you can look at is you can look at building muscular endurance. So muscular endurance is a little bit different than strength, whereas that rep range is anywhere between 15 to 20 reps. It could even go as high as 25 reps, whereas you are using a lighter weight to build endurance in those muscles, because technically, if you're doing 20 reps, that set is a lot longer than if you're doing 12 reps. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just doing more weight, right? And you could use free weights with that. You can use almost anything. But I think one of the best ways is using bands. If you're looking to do more muscular endurance or even strength, but endurance wise, I find using some sort of power band or those giant elastic bands or tubings are a great way to build some strength, build muscular endurance. And the third thing, which is muscular activation. So activating your muscles and letting your brain know, like, hey, I'm going to move this band to the side. So if I'm going to do, I'm going to give an example of like an X walk where you put up, where you stand on and then you walk to your right and you walk to your left and something like that. And like just being focused on, okay, I'm going to walk, I'm going to move my feet and I'm going to use my hips. I'm going to use my glutes to move to the right and really just trying to push and use the right muscles to help you move. And then eventually you're going to fatigue, but it's going to take a number of reps to do that. And probably the third thing that I would add, which is when we are doing any kind of sport and training, you're going to have some imbalances, especially if you become an expert like in running or you become an expert like in baseball or golf. You're only going to swing one way generally, right? So you're going to develop imbalances. And when we develop those imbalances, that's when the risk of injury becomes a little bit higher. So particularly for running, I would say because we're running generally with both our feet, and the imbalances that you're going to face is I'm going to say this loosely, like a little easier to fix. So when we're running, the imbalance that you're going to have is most people's hamstrings are quite tight. So that's when we're trying to touch our toes and keep our legs straight. For runners, they generally have a little bit of a harder time. Would you say that ever happens to you?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So are you pretty good at touching your toes with keeping your legs straight?
I'm okay with that. I mean but I do know that I'm not doing enough about things that improve my range of motion.
Mm-hmm. So the common things are going to be like your hamstrings, your hips are tight. So practicing dynamic stretching before and after. So dynamic stretch is a little bit different than static stretching, where you're moving your body in the different ranges of motion. You know, not just like coming down and trying to touch your toes, but repeatedly coming all the way up, coming all the way down. That would be considered like a dynamic stretch. And to me, you know, to me, I find that is a much better way to, people will call it flexibility, but I'll call it mobility. To be able to move within the range and move within the range more safely and getting and seeing improvement a lot faster that way. There's rarely ever a time when you're doing any kind of move or exercise where you're just holding a position, right? You're constantly moving. Even when I train weight, I think of that as a stretching. I use that as a stretching mobility type move. Even when I do it like a chest press, I try to bring the weight as far down as I comfortably can and be able to push the weight up all the way up. And I have found personally that I've built much more mobility, flexibility, and even stability that way by taking that method. So if you're still afraid about building too much muscle mass, then, you know, choosing something like calisthenics would probably be your best bet, and probably easier to fit in if you're running outdoors. So like push-ups, squats, planking, and those types of things.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. And then one of the, again, very practical reason I don't want to build too much mass is I have moved from a size large to size medium, and now I'm borderline size small. I just don't want to buy more new clothes. So.
It's expensive. I hear you. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a great question. And but another thing that you can look at is you can look at building muscular endurance. So muscular endurance is a little bit different than strength. Whereas that rep range is anywhere between 15 to 20 reps. It could even go as high as 25 reps. Whereas you are using a lighter weight to build endurance in those muscles, because technically if you're doing 20 reps, that set is a lot longer than if you're doing 12 reps. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just doing more weight, right? And you could use free weights with that. You can use almost anything. But I think one of the best ways is using BAM. If you're looking to do more muscular endurance or even strength, but endurance wise, I find using some sort of power band or those giant elastic bands or tubings are a great way to build some strength, build muscular endurance. And the third thing, which is muscular activation. So activating your muscles and letting your brain know, like, hey, I'm going to move this band to the side. So if I'm going to do, I'm going to give an example of like an X walk where you put up, where you stand on and then you walk to your right and you walk to your left and something like that. And like just being focused on, okay, I'm going to walk, I'm going to move my feet and I'm going to use my hips. I'm going to use my glutes to move to the right. And really just trying to push and use the right muscles to help you move. And then eventually you're going to fatigue, but it's going to take a number of reps to do that. And probably the third thing that I would add, which is when we are doing any kind of sport and training, you're going to have some imbalances. Especially if you become an expert like in running or you become an expert like in baseball or golf, you're only going to swing one way generally, right? So you're going to develop imbalances. And when we develop those imbalances, that's when the risk of injury becomes a little bit higher. So particularly for running, I would say because we're running generally with both our feet and legs, the imbalances that you're going to face is I'm going to say this loosely, like a little easier to fix. But when we're running, the imbalance that you're going to have is most people's hamstrings are quite tight. So that's when we're trying to touch our toes and keep our legs straight. For runners, they generally have a little bit of a harder time. Would you say that ever happens to you?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So are you pretty good at touching your toes with keeping your legs straight?
I'm okay with that. I mean but I do know that I'm not doing enough about things that improve my range of motion.
Mm-hmm. So the common things are going to be like your hamstrings, your hips are tight. So practicing dynamic stretching before and after. So dynamic stretch is a little bit different than static stretching, where you're moving your body in the different ranges of motion. You know, not just like coming down and trying to touch your toes, but repeatedly coming all the way up, coming all the way down. That would be considered like a dynamic stretch. And to me, you know, to me, I find that is a much better way to, people will call it flexibility, but I'll call it mobility, to be able to move within the range and move within the range more safely and getting and seeing improvement a lot faster that way. There's rarely ever a time when you're doing any kind of move or exercise where you're just holding a position, right? You're constantly moving. Even when I train weight, I think of that as a stretching. I use that as a stretching mobility type move. Even when I do it like a chest press, I try to bring the weight as far down as I comfortably can and be able to push the weight up all the way up. And I have found personally that I've built much more mobility, flexibility, and even stability that way by taking that method. So if you're still afraid about building too much muscle mass, then, you know, choosing something like calisthenics would probably be your best bet and probably easier to fit in if you're running outdoors. So like push-ups, squats, planking, and those types of things.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. And then one of the, again, very practical reason I don't want to build too much mass is I have moved from a size large to a size medium, and now I'm borderline size small. I just don't want to buy more new clothes. So.
It's expensive. I hear you. Yeah. So
So yeah, I think that's a great question, and you know, I can totally understand why the clothes aspect and the time aspect, but I still wouldn't shy away from it, because it will give you other tools that you'd be like, oh, okay, you know what, I thought I'd be strong at doing push-ups, but I'm not, right? And I don't know, it for me, like, learning those things about myself ignites my own passion for, oh, I want to get better at this, you know.
You're so spot on. I mean, to me, we need to start somewhere. It's not we want to be an Olympian, but I think my weightlifting or workout journey started out with, well, I want to be able to save my life if I fall down a cliff. I want to be able to lift my child if I need to carry them for a long time, you know. It's almost as if pick something that is dear to your heart, is important to you, that you need some form of physical endurance to do that. You know, you get chased by a thief, you better be able to run. So take something that's practical and can happen.
Yeah.
Start from there. And then once then figure out what works for you and what you're good at and interested in doing more, and then build from there. But I say a lot of people give things up is because they don't have practical uses or what, or they haven't connected out. So to me, the mental toughness is because of work required. So I have a practical reason to train my mental toughness. So I choose something I enjoy, which is running, but I go from running to endurance running. So that's what I do. But for a lot of people out there, again, find something practical that you can connect to physical well-being and then start from there. And that's a really good way to commit, because you get almost the instant reward out of your hard work, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned, like, you know, if you're hanging off a cliff and you got to hold your baby or your kids, or I personally admire runners, because it's something that I would love to do consistently. But I personally am not a big fan of running. But when I do run, the things that get me through especially the beginning, I don't know if you ever feel this, but the first 5 minutes of running, it's so hard for me to adjust. But after that, I find I adjust. But what helps me get through that is, I think, like, if this was a zombie apocalypse and a zombie was chasing me, I got to last more than 5 minutes. And it's funny that's what runs through my mind as I'm trying to get through that first 5 minute hurdle.
That's a five, and basically a shock in the body. It's something that you don't normally enjoy and you're not used to. The first 5 minutes are toughest, and most people give up, and most people kind of look at, well, I did my 5 minutes and I finished. But most people, I would say that workout in general, if you get through the five, if you prep your mind to say the first 5 minutes is a shock in the system, things will get better. And then you get past it, to your point, you actually feel good after.
Yeah.
But a lot of people give up because I think part of the mental awareness about I will encounter this, but things will get better, is like people running uphill. It's tough. I'm dying. I can't do anymore. But, you know, where there's an uphill, after the turn, it's downhill. So it's going to be easy. So stick to it, and you will get there.
Absolutely. So. And so before I let you go, Daniel, you've given us a lot of words of wisdom here. Do you have anything else that you'd like to leave a lasting impression with? Any last words?
I love what you're doing, like, Jimmy. You're doing the right things. And I would say, though, yes, if the one thing I'll tell people to focus on, whether fitness or anything, is don't think of it as this separating your life into doing one thing. Because, like, this is dinner time, this is fitness time, this is business work time, and all that. It's life, it's like breathing. You do it throughout the day. So whatever you think that is going to be difficult for you to overcome, trying to think about, well, this is how I live, how do you incorporate those as a routine, as part of day-to-day, and make it part of your routines, like breathing. And we don't breathe for one day and stop for the next day. So don't go all out today. Use that philosophy, then gradually things that become, that is seemingly uncomfortable today, will just become part of the day.
That's excellent advice, Daniel. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story and sharing your tips and tricks here. Thank you so much for coming on the Remix by Fitness podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
If you want to meet more like-minded individuals such as Daniel, join the Remix My Fitness community on Facebook. It's free, and you'll be part of a community of people who will share recipes, exercise routines, their own personal journey. But more than anything, they will hold you accountable for your actions. I'm looking forward to remixing your fitness there. Until next time.